Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, you are listening to The Southern Fork, a podcast that hosts kitchen chats with some of the most interesting people in the culinary South. I'm your host, Stephanie Burt, and I'm always hungry to learn more. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is supported by Bake From Scratch, voted number one hottest magazine launch in 2016. You've probably seen it while waiting in line at the grocery store. Hint, it's the one with those beautiful covers that make you think, I need to make that tart, or those cookies, or wow, I wish I had cake right now. I've been thrilled and honored to write for this publication a couple of times, but even more than that, I really love baking from it. The recipes are tested, the stories are interesting, and I have these pages to thank for adding rose water to my classic pound cake. It's easy to subscribe by going to bakefromscratch.com. While there, check out some recipes and the Bake From Scratch cookbook too. Hello, easy gift. And remember, baking and cooking is about being fearless to try something new. Visit bakefromscratch.com today to learn more and get inspired to bake your best this holiday season. Sometimes we have to work at a job until we figure out what we really want to do. Or at least it seems to happen that way for a lot of us these days. And more often than not, that next thing finds us when and where we least expect it. Jason Burke of The New Primal changed his life by working in a garage. Actually, two garages. The first was a CrossFit gym in a garage on Daniel Island outside Charleston, South Carolina. It was there that he learned about eating for performance, or in other words, eating so he could support those lift a tire over your head workouts. And beef jerky was one such snack he started making for just that purpose. The second garage was a leap of faith. The move from his condo kitchen to a DHEC approved garage kitchen at a house in Mount Pleasant, where he began his new beef jerky career path in earnest. Today, his company is poised to be one of the industry leaders in the healthy snack market, and so we chatted from his storefront office in Park Circle in North Charleston, South Carolina. Behind him was a wall of beef jerky and meat sticks and a bookshelf of motivational texts, so I knew this is a man who isn't stopping until his snack food company is a household name. Join us to learn the story behind a snack that is delicious and even a little addictive, even for someone like me who never needs to eat for CrossFit. Welcome to the Southern Fork.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, well, you're actually having me because I'm sitting in a concrete kind of warehousey strip in Park Circle. We're going to hear some train station. I actually got a really good parking space right in front of Stems and Skins. Hey, Matt. Hey, Justin. So after this, you never know. I might just need to pop in. And say,
I think you should. You should.
But anyway, we're here not to talk about wine, which is unusual for me. We're here to talk about healthy food.
Imagine that.
But it's still beef jerky, so I like that. So let's talk a little bit about New Primal and why in the world you now have hitched your star upon beef jerky, the thing that people love to make in their dehydrators.
I get asked that question all the time because if you meet me and we have more than a 5-minute conversation, you'll ask, why in the world did you start a beef jerky company? I once wrote an article that I can't seem to find anymore on why I started a beef jerky company. But Yeah, you are here in Park Circle in our office that we ripped apart about a year and a half ago. We moved here from a previous facility where we used to actually manufacture the product. We don't make it here. Right. And
I didn't smell the scent of spices and beef when I hit the door. So
yeah, forget about that. And we sort of gutted this place, and so it is quite empty with concrete floors. But we think they look pretty cool.
Yeah, they're cool. They're great. Yeah.
So there you go.
I dig them. They're horrible for sound, but cool. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys can deal with it. So I moved to the Charleston area in 2008.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in Florida, and
where in Florida?
In Tampa.
Tampa. I used to work in Tampa.
I grew up in Tampa. I never left. I went there for school. I never thought I would leave. And I visited Charleston in the spring of 08. And of course, it's quite seductive in the springtime. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, maybe I'll move there. Mm-hmm. And 2 months later, I was here. So I was working a sales job at the time at a local software company. And, you know, it was a great job and I was having fun, but it certainly wasn't something I looked at as my 20-year career or anything. I was using it, quite honestly, as a placeholder to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. I come from I don't want to say a culinary family. I don't have a ton of chefs or cooks or things like that in my family, but my mom is Cuban, and our house was always full of people who came to eat dinner. Mm-hmm. And so she would always make enough food to cook for the neighborhood.
Do you use Cuban spices in your jerky?
I don't use a ton of them in my jerky. I mean, we certainly, there are spices and chipotle powders and things that go in just about everything that I make just because it's what I'm used to and what I know
Ropa
Vieja.
Ropa
Vieja is
my favorite.
It is by far my favorite meal.
Your mom, I'm sure she did a really good job with that. It takes all day.
It's a 24-hour process.
Yeah.
And it is phenomenal. There's a little Cuban restaurant in Hoboken, New Jersey, mm-hmm. that makes it just like my mom makes it.
Ah.
And so I was there last week, and my wife and I were in New York City for something completely different, and we went out of our way to go over to Hoboken to eat the ropa vieja. Yeah. So it's certainly...
The ropa vieja aside, I feel like it's appropriate for a beef jerky show.
Oh, yep, there you go.
It's right there.
Right in alignment. So, you know, look, when I was selling software and sitting at my desk, you know, essentially there are a couple of paths here, but one is my dad had open heart surgery. Mm-hmm. I had to go back to Florida for an open heart surgery. They went in to do a triple bypass. They ended up doing a quintuple bypass and you know, bypassed five arteries. And I was sitting in the waiting room and a gentleman said, you know, prepare for this when you get older because there's nothing you can do about it. It's genetic. And in that moment, I thought, man, is that true?
I think that's true myself.
Is that true? And so I challenged that thinking and I came home and thought, okay, well, how am I eating? You know, am I exercising? Am I sitting at my desk all day? And so I joined a gym. Mm-hmm. I joined a CrossFit gym, and it was in a garage on Daniel Island. And
I know that garage on Daniel Island.
And and so I was working out in this CrossFit gym and it just so happens that Robert, the gym owner, mm-hmm. is extremely passionate about food. And just general, you know, diet for performance. And so, you know, he imparted some of that wisdom on me, and it caused me to want to kind of go down this path of just mm-hmm. learning more about nutrition. Mm-hmm. So I was working out 5 or 6 days a week. I'm hungry all the time because my metabolism is just really sped up, and I was hungry at my desk all day long. And so I was trying to, you know, snack healthier. Mm-hmm. And I started eating, you know, almonds and trail mix.
But, like, you want to kill yourself after a while
with
the almonds.
Oh, my God. I could not bear another one.
You're like, I do the light salt. I do the no salt. I do the raw. I went through. I get it.
I mean,
I get
it. At some point, I just wanted exactly. And I was eating raw almonds sometimes. Anyway, so I thought, gosh, there has to be something else. So I'm at my desk, and I'm looking up, you know, looking at different blog sites, looking for snack ideas and things that would, you know, tide me over that would keep me away from the M&Ms mm-hmm. because, you know, honestly, I have a sweet tooth and I want the M&Ms. So,
are you a peanut or plain man?
I like both.
Oh, yeah?
I really do. If you put either in front of me, I'll eat the bag. So, you know, my wife likes peanut. So when she brings those home, I eat the bag.
Yeah.
So, you know, I read a blog article right there was in front of me, staring me in the face, like beef jerky. Mm-hmm. And so I thought beef jerky is, you know, that was the snack I ate as a kid when my dad took me fishing, or, you know, that's what I see truck drivers eat and that kind of thing. And I never looked at it as a...
I need a Slim Jim.
Yeah, it wasn't
By the way, Slim Jim's never going to sponsor the Southern Pork after this show.
I never thought...
I'm throwing them under the bus at every moment.
Well, I never thought it would be a healthy snack. I always looked at it as sort of, you know, equivalent to the M&Ms, right? Yeah, you know, right. Something that's really... You know, maybe indulgent, but bad for you. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that, you know, there were healthy bloggers and influencers that were saying you should eat this. Mm-hmm. So at the time, I was on sort of a no sugar, you know, a sugar elimination plan. And I was looking for, I was learning about, you know, how animals were raised. And I was buying meat from a CSA. And so mm-hmm. I certainly didn't want to just, you know, buy mystery meat out of a Slim Jim, right. for example. So I went to Whole Foods and I was looking for the healthy beef jerky. It turns out even the stuff there was still full of sugar. And I couldn't really find a ton of animal welfare claims. I mean, there was some stuff that said organic on it, but that just, you know, that could mean the cow still eats organic corn and soy. And I was trying to avoid those things at the time, you know, heavily. And so I said, well, you know, this isn't what I want. So I went home and I Googled how to make beef jerky. Mm-hmm. And I watched some YouTube videos, and there are some really interesting...
YouTube is the way to go.
There are some very entertaining videos.
I replaced my headlamp. In the car with YouTube.
You can learn how to do anything. Yeah. I mean, you can replace your car engine.
I was upside down, and I had to end up going too, but I didn't know that could be.
Listen, so, you, like I said, you can.
So you YouTubed it.
I YouTubed it. I bought a little $40 tabletop dehydrator, and I started making jerky at home, take it to work in a little Ziploc bag, keep it at my desk.
Good Southerners know about the dehydrator.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to those people who hunt. Because that is one of the ways that you use up all that deer meat.
That's right. You have to. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there are plenty of Southerners who have their own at-home dehydrators. And, you know, I went from a little $40 tabletop dehydrator to one that was a little more expensive, maybe a couple $100 that real, you know, avid hunters probably keep at mm-hmm. home on hand. But at one point, within about 6 months, I had six of those bad boys running in my kitchen. And I lived in a little condo on Daniel Island at the time. And my wife came home from a girls' night out and said, listen, you got to get this stuff out of my house. Because I was making it for, it wasn't just for me anymore. I was making it for people at my office and people at the gym. And they were...
You became the beef jerky guy.
I was the beef jerky guy. And they were handing me $20 bills to make them some the next time, you know, I made some. So yeah. Our refrigerator was full of gallon jugs of like marinade that I was pre-mixing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was making, you know, think moho, right? I was making my own moho, right? So back to the mm-hmm. to the Cuban food. But all these gallon jugs of marinade and just meat. And so it wasn't any food in the house.
What were the cuts? That's interesting. What are the first cuts?
Well, so to make jerky, you need a lean kind of whole muscle cut of meat. Mm-hmm. And so the first cut I ever used was a flank steak.
I was going to say flank steak because that's familiar to you.
Flank steak, extremely familiar. Yeah. I've used some London broil, right? Because mm-hmm. it's extremely sort of that top sirloin mm-hmm. Cut. But essentially, you know, to make jerky, you need really lean muscle cuts. So think rounds. And so, if you want a really tender kind of at home, you can use some stuff from the pectoral and the shoulder and you know, some roasts and, mm-hmm. and things like that. But, you know, at scale.
But that's like, I mean, seriously, you got six going in the condo in Daniel Island. You never know what's going on in condos in Daniel Island.
Listen, there was this constant white noise coming all the time, and it smelled like a barbecue place.
Right, and so your neighbors are like, what's up with that, dude? Like, it smells, he really likes grilling, but we don't see a grill. Yeah, like, where is it coming from?
We weren't even allowed to have grills on our porches.
So... You're buying all this meat in a condo fridge.
Yeah.
How much? That's something that's always fascinated me. I mean, I remember in my world, the kale chip was the, you know, thing that I'm going to dehydrate and I'm going to make.
Sure.
I'm going to be like eating kale chips every day. Like, I'm not buying that stuff. I know how to make that. You buy a stuff a bag full of it and you come and then you have like a cereal bowl full. At
right.
the end, and you're like, done. So how many like pounds of meat were you buying here to do this?
A lot.
Plus, it had to be expensive.
Very expensive.
Because you're using grass-fed.
Using 100% grass-fed beef. Early on, it was local 100% grass-fed beef. No hormones, no antibiotics. These are really holistically raised animals. And Several local farms. Okay. There were several local farms that I bought it from. At one point, I started with one, and then they couldn't keep up, mm-hmm. and then I went to another, and so it just sort of... And then eventually, as it really got to scale, you know, we're not even to scale today, but as it really grew, there was no one... I mean, I could buy... I only used one cut, right? Mm-hmm. So we got to a point where we were using just this top round, and there weren't enough local farms that could keep up with the amount of top round that we were using, but... In the beginning, I mean, you know, maybe I would dehydrate 100 pounds a week.
And how many pounds of jerky does that end up being?
Think about 30% on the yield.
Okay.
So you end up with about 30 pounds of jerky out of 100 pounds a
week. And then, of course, we have all the spices and marinade. Mm-hmm. You're making the marinade. It's water and oil. Or whatever.
Sure.
But there's a lot of spices, and you're buying those in bulk at some point.
Yeah, and you and well, early on, I was just going to Costco. Yeah. To, you know, try to buy those in bulk and get a good deal. But then there were ingredients that I started to use that were very hard to get in bulk. Like I replaced soy sauce as a you know traditional ingredient in most jerky products, soy sauce or tamari if you want the gluten free version of that. But I was eliminating soy altogether, and so I was looking for an alternative to that. And it's very difficult to recreate what soy sauce does to a jerky product. Quite mm-hmm. honestly, it's magic. Mm-hmm. And there was a new item at the time called coconut aminos and coconut mm-hmm. amino acids.
Oh,
and it's this, you know, it's the nectar of the coconut blossom. And
it's
and
on it's, the same aisle of nutritional yeast, almost, right?
There you go.
Hey, Jessica, how's it going? I get your nutritional yeast love.
There you go. It's exactly that. So, but it's... and it's sweeter. It has kind of a, because it's from the nectar of the coconut
bottle.
So it's sweeter than soy sauce, but it was the closest thing I could find to a soy sauce replacement.
Right.
That would give me the consistency and a little bit of that flavor profile. I struggled with that quite honestly. Not having a chef's background, I struggled with getting the flavor profile really. Again, soy sauce covers a multitude of sins,
but
as does sugar.
But you were working for yourself, so you could be like, hey, you know, this is utilitarian and it's slightly better than almonds. So
that's right.
We're going to work from there. Like,
that's right. That's
and then
right.
And you're like, okay, that's better. And then your friends are like, oh, that batch wasn't my fave. And so, you know, you were crowdsourcing.
Totally.
Yeah.
100%. I'd get feedback from every single person at the gym and at the office, and I would tweak every batch. No batch, mm-hmm. Every batch was a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And finally, when my wife came home from that girls' night out and said, get the stuff out of my house, that was sort of the aha moment where we thought, well, maybe we're on to something. Mm-hmm. So maybe people really do want, you know, a good high-protein meat snack that doesn't come from a gas station. Mm-hmm. Right? And that was the general, you know, thought process. And so I rented
They're so sanitary by the cash register.
When you open up those bins and they're just laying there.
Or they're just standing in a... in a plastic cup.
Oh, yes.
You know, you're like, I don't know if I could ever be hungry enough for that.
Right. Exactly. So I thought maybe people want jerky, but not that kind.
Right. But that's something hard to deal with. I mean, you're dealing with this. I know we're going to talk about the rental, but you're not just making beef jerky and doing this. You're fighting a cultural kind of icon that has, you know, trappings around it. So you're changing that.
Absolutely. And there are two dominant legacy brands in meat snacks that have had absolutely no competition for mm-hmm. the last three decades. Mm-hmm. Very similar to, if you think about it, and a little different because the category is bigger, but similar to yogurt pre-Chobani. And, mm-hmm. you know, before Chobani, if you went to any grocery store, there are two big yogurt brands. Mm-hmm. By and large, they're all the same. They're watered down. They're thin. They're high in sugar. Mm-hmm. And they're not really rich, creamy yogurt. They're really sugar. Mm-hmm. And so I look at, you know, jerky and meat snacks being very similar 7, 8, 9 years ago.
So you rented?
I rented a 200-square-foot catering kitchen that a woman had converted her garage. And so I went from a condo to a garage. I converted her garage into a DHEC-inspected kitchen.
I think I know that. It was on John's Island, wasn't it?
Well, no, this one was in Mount Pleasant. We eventually moved to John's Island.
Okay.
And quite honestly, it was very nice. Like, it was really, really well done, really clean, you know, really nice. And I rented it kind of as a, you know, she only used it 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. So it was where I went to, you know, go and kind of craft jerky. I rented and made an investment in a larger machine and some vacuum sealers that could do a little better than my at-home food saver and those kinds of things. And And then I started to go down the path of regulatory compliance with the USDA and getting through all of those kinds of things.
Super fun.
Which I had no idea how to navigate any of those processes. I called everyone from DHEC to the Clemson extension of the South Carolina Department of Agriculture to the USDA, and everyone kind of just kept sending me in circles until finally I figured out what to do. But I rented that was our first place, and we set up a website, and the website was awful, but it's something I just kind of put up, used an e-commerce template, and it was this vacuum sealed bag of just really homemade looking jerky, and people started buying it. It was the weirdest thing. We didn't do marketing. We didn't do any social media. Just and not in droves. We're not talking tens of thousands of dollars here. But you know, an order a day.
That's pretty good.
You know, an order a day and two orders a day, and all over the country and weird places. And so I would just go do my day job and go package jerky at night and ship it out.
Weekends were jerky filled.
That was it. That was it. So we did that for about 2 years. Uh-huh. About 2 years, I worked the day job while doing that as kind of a part-time mm-hmm. side gig. And before I pulled the plug and went, quote, full-time mm-hmm. into the jerky business.
Yeah,
that's right.
The world of jerky. But you have some interesting flavors, and I got a chance to sample some of them. And, you know, it's different. So we have the actual jerky. We have the meat stick. What's so great about the meat stick is it is not squishing out oil.
Yes.
But it's a different consistency. It's very similar to that
sure.
product. How did you choose, let's say cilantro lime. I'm like, whoa, that's a, number one, it's turkey stick. Which I was like, whoa. I didn't really think about anything other than beef. I know spicy and all those things. So it's turkey. And then cilantro lime is just weird. Like, how did you choose that?
So, great question. We did not innovate flavors for several years. We were just making a classic grass-fed beef mm-hmm. jerky. We finally launched a spicy grass-fed beef jerky, and that was a big deal for us. Mm-hmm. And then we were getting requests for additional proteins. We started to see the rise of things like turkey jerky or chicken and some other types of proteins being used in meat snacks. And so we extended into turkey jerky. But, you know, when I left my job and went full-time, that was at the end of 2012. And we didn't launch another new item really until 2016.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just had sort of this classic flavored beef jerky.
And there was no me. It was just you at first.
Me and there's one or two of us here around that were around back then, but there was a couple of us. But yeah, we didn't do anything really innovative. And so we got to a point where we felt like we could innovate. Mm-hmm. And we started to look at what other iterations off of meat snacks could we do. And so, you know, there's the big legacy brand that makes jerky that people are familiar with in gas stations with this red and black packaging that, mm-hmm. you know, is very distinct. And then there's the Slim Jim, as you mentioned earlier, which, mm-hmm. you know, makes this stick. Now, a lot of Slim Jims are mixed kind of beef and pork and mystery meat.
I don't want to know what they are. Let's just leave it at that. It's a Slim Jim.
That's right.
Its own thing.
And so we thought, okay, well, how do we clean that up? Well, first off, we don't blend mystery meats, right? You can still use trim, but you're not using, like, hooves and noses and weird things like that, right?
Right.
So that was the first thing that we said, let's do that. And then two, we're not going to add a bunch of water and oil to this. So that's where you get that ooze from the Slim Jim where like there's, you know, they bulk up the meat by adding a bunch of water and oil. And so it kind of adds to the weight.
I think Slim Jim Ooze would be a really good punk rock band name.
That would be a great punk rock band name. Yeah, absolutely. I may start that band. So you know, we launched the first three meat sticks in the same flavor profiles as our jerky. Mm-hmm. Classic, spicy, and turkey.
Right.
And it went really well. People thought, wow, this is a new take on that concept, but it's clean. The ingredients are pronounceable. It comes from holistically raised animals. And I can trust it. Mm-hmm. So then we thought, okay, well, we've never had fun with flavor profile. These items are going really well for us. Let's kind of have some fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first flavor we thought it was barbecue.
Right.
But then quite honestly, we just kind of went around the room internally and thought, what would be some interesting flavor mixes? And we just mm-hmm. brainstormed for a full, you know, few hours, and we came up with all these weird, you know, combinations. And we thought sweet and hot made sense. So we have this habanero pineapple. Mm-hmm. And I think it was our head of sales here. I think he was the one that maybe he had a drink that was kind of a cilantro lime cocktail mm-hmm. drink that he thought was really good and said, I think this will make a good jerky. Mm-hmm. So it was originally supposed to be a jerky, a traditional jerky product. But as we were iterating on the meat sticks, we thought, let's try it. Mm-hmm. And if you like cilantro and you like this kind of citrusy flavor to go with it, you'll love it. Mm-hmm. If you don't like cilantro, you're not going to like that stick. Right. But really, it was kind of a brainstorm session.
People have reactions to cilantro.
Cilantro is a mm-hmm. clear... If you love it, you'll love the stick. If you don't like cilantro, that's not the stick for you. But that came from a drink. Mm-hmm. So that came from a drink idea and a cocktail idea, and we decided we would put it into jerky, and it just so happens to make a really cool flavor profile. So now we have 7 flavor profiles for the meat sticks, and we have 4 on the jerky.
And the technical word of that is the meat folio.
That's right. We have a full meat folio.
Yeah,
so we don't have a portfolio of meat snacks. We have a meat folio. That's mm-hmm. right. That's right. Buyers at retail stores love that.
Well, and you're in how many outlets? I mean, how many retailers at this point?
Nationally, we're in around 7,000 locations.
Yeah, that's a lot. So I'm guessing that's more than the Whole 30 group and more than your CrossFit people. I know it's shocking, but I'm not really in either one of those food tribes.
Sure.
Amaro's not in Whole 30, in case you're wondering.
Fair enough. Well, you know, we think that the food tribes kind of lead the charge in mm-hmm. in being the early adopters on innovation like this. And then ultimately, we hope that those trends shift in mass.
Right. Well, we've seen this before. We've seen this in the yogurt sphere, which I think is a really good example. Because there are more yogurt brands and flavors and styles. I mean, every time I'm at Harris Teeter, that's one guy's full-time job is restocking those little cups.
That's right.
I mean, if you go to the yogurt area, there's someone always there restocking. It's like the worst game of Jenga ever for them. I remember when organic was put all on one aisle, and it was the health food aisle.
Right.
And now there's an organic alternative product for every thing in the grocery store.
That's right.
For the most part.
That's right.
So this is what you're seeing in this world, the beef jerky world.
Yeah, you have these tiers of consumers that you know apply to every category, but you have people that don't buy the hype. You have people that don't believe that any of the marketing terms in food mm-hmm. are real, that question everything, and they just don't buy the hype, and they're very loyal to these old legacy brands, and they don't necessarily read ingredients, but they're shopping price and mm-hmm. things like that. You have this kind of mid-tier of people who, you know, they heard Dr. Oz say that this was a healthier way to eat. So they go to the store looking for your more, quote, natural items. Mm-hmm. They might start paying attention to the nutrition panels and the ingredient decks, but, you know, not fully dialed into like a full-on organic, mm-hmm. you know, buy-in per se. And then I think you have this really the highest tier, shouldn't say the highest tier, it's a bad way to say it, but just the third tier of people who are just full on, don't buy anything that's not organic. All the meat they're buying is, you know, pasture raised. They're really, really sensitive to ingredient panels. Maybe they have food allergies. Mm-hmm. But these are the folks that are the early adopters of high integrity items like ours. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have these different tiers of shoppers and there are items in grocery stores now to service all of them. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Publix or Harris Teeter, you can't ignore the person who still likes Slim Jim.
Right.
Right? And that's fine. There are plenty of those consumers out there. They're buying lots of Slim Jim. Mm-hmm. And you can't ignore the person who wants to eat a little healthier, but maybe is not going to pay an absolute premium for eating healthier.
Right.
And then there's the person who doesn't look at price at all, and they're going to pay a premium for the what they think is the highest integrity mm-hmm. item on the shelf, and they're going to shop these sort of next generation brands that are disrupting categories across the grocery store.
So do you still eat jerky?
I do.
What part of the meat folio do you enjoy?
So our newest product is a chicken jerky. Mm-hmm. It's a date and rosemary chicken jerky.
I have that. I love date. I love rosemary. I love chicken. But I'm like, wow, it was interesting. And that's usually a pretty good sign for me. That's a compliment. You know,
okay.
Weird and interesting is always good because I taste a lot of the same things all the time. So if you can get me to be like, whoa.
That product we hope is interesting. We hope it causes people to think differently about mm-hmm. jerky altogether,
right.
And look at it as more of a culinary desk snack than mm-hmm. and a gas station snack. Mm-hmm. So I eat more of that, I would say, today just because it's new and I've eaten a lot of our classic jerky. Mm-hmm. I have to sample all the QA, all the quality, you know, tests that we do. I sample all of those, so I still consume product daily. I eat more of the meat sticks than I do the jerky, to be completely honest with you. I find them more portable. I find them kind of just easier and quicker to deal with. If I'm in a rush, I can eat a meat stick and be held over versus having to kind of dig into the bag of jerky for 15 minutes. I like our barbecue beef, our barbecue pork stick, and I like our classic beef stick. Those are my two favorites. The turkey sticks are growing on me, but they tend to be a little drier, and some people prefer that. I think our turkey stick sells better online than anywhere else, so it's, you know, clearly a lot of people like it, but I like the classic beef stick and the barbecue pork stick the most, along with the Dayton Rosemary chicken jerky these days.
Do you have a license plate? Do you have a vanity license plate that has anything to do with jerky?
Not yet.
Can I suggest that to you?
Sure, I'll take it. I think
it's like Jerky Man or something. Just make it slightly raunchy, but don't go all the way. I mean, you're a classy guy. Don't do that. But
I've never even thought about it, but it's a great idea. It's a
just
great
a little
idea.
Subtle.
All right, fair enough. Okay. I will do that.
If people want to learn more about New Primal and all of the amazing flavors that are happening here under your nose in Park Circle, North Charleston, South Carolina, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. We're going to have links there. We're going to also have a picture of Mr. Radio Voice behind this interview. He's done a few interviews before. I know it's shocking. I know you can't tell. But you can go to thesouthernfork.com. If you like what you hear, I'm doing this every week. So excited to bring stories from grocery stores to chefs to a man who started making beef jerky in his Daniel Island condo and now has it in 7,000 outlets. Congratulations on
Thank
that,
you.
Sir.
Thank you
so much for coming today.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you gonna eat all that?